Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Friday, everybody. My, we've got a lot of stuff to get to today. Like, quite a full plate of sorts. We've got the Pistons setting a new franchise low. We'll get into that later on. Of course, it's Friday, so we'll do some unsolicited advice coming up. We've got to talk about the big news from yesterday that you have no doubt heard and already seen all of the memes about. Jared Goff has some comments that I feel like are going to be rather, some of you I feel like are going to agree with wholeheartedly. Those of us who work in the media probably a little bit less so. But unfortunately, we do have to start today with your Detroit Red Wings. Cue the music.
You're not even going to mention that I don't look homeless today?
I almost did. I almost led right off with it, but I'm like, I'm going to be nice for exactly once and only once. Oh, so you know.
I'm telling you, if you folks at home, if you guys or some women out there have never had a hot shave, you are missing out. Oh my God, it's amazing. I needed some sort of a therapy after that Wings game. I turned it off after the second period. I'm like, it's not looking good. Once it was like 4-2 or something like that, I just peaced out.
I can't really say I blame you. I mean, you missed a nice comeback in the third period, and that was, I mean, it was nice to see, but, you know, a little too late, guys. Then it went to OT, and as we've established, when you need a goalie that can come up with a big save, you don't have one of those.
Alex Lyon has had some big games, but that was not it. He's shown why he has been a career backup, and it's sad to see. I mean, because we've seen him steal a game or two. There are some things that we can look at positively. I mean, Lucas Raymond with a hat trick. I believe that the first hat trick of his career.
I believe you're right on that, but man, this is the absolute where you needed a win. You needed at least one win this week against one of the two teams that was challenging you, and you managed to not get it in either of these games.
Yeah, this one hurt. You got a point out of the deal, but 2 points would have been sweeter.
Yeah, you now you need help and you need to win out. That's basically all this meant. Like, you're getting that point last night means that you are, by the slimmest of margins, still in it. And if you lose or tie, or if you lose one more game, you're done. And you still need a bunch of help from the other teams around you.
Yeah, yeah. Take it on Toronto on tomorrow. Is that tomorrow?
That is tomorrow.
So, yeah.
I don't know if I can, to watch.
I'm not even really worried about it because I don't feel very positive about what happened. I do like the fact that the Wings were able to claw back and take it to OT. They weren't able to get it done in OT, but you've got once Jeff Carter scored that shorthanded goal, and it was 5-3 that I checked out. Once I saw that, I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm out. I'm tapping out.
Hard to blame you.
Yeah, it's been a rough couple of games.
You know what's even rougher? Derek Lalonde's press conferences. Last night.
Is it just another cliche-laden?
No, it's not. It's worse than just being cliche hockey talk. It's basically adopting full-on a loser mentality. Like, he's completely and utterly defeated, and he's not only chalking up this season, but next season as well, which we'll get to that clip in a moment.
Oh, no. Hell no to the no.
Yeah, first, let me hit you with the first clip after last night's game and see if you can spot the red flags, shall we? Take it away there, Gru.
I addressed the guys after a game, but I had to address them after this just simply because that was a huge point. To be down 7 minutes left, 2 goals on the road. I give our guys a ton of credit for battling, staying in, and getting a point. You know, there's still a path there because of that point.
Now, obviously the coach speak at the end is like, that is what it is. He's not going to sell out the team or anything. But what I don't like was the very beginning of that.
To address the guys after a game.
He doesn't normally address the guys after a game.
Well, see, that's not coaching.
What are you doing then?
Talking to your players is the very essence of coaching.
It's like the most important part. And so he just doesn't say anything. Well, no wonder this team's quit on him.
You think it's that, or is it just like...
I think it's that.
I know I'm not going to get in trouble. I'm not going to get benched. I'm not going to lose any ice time. So I'm not. I can go get by tonight by just giving 85% or 90%.
Well, that's Lowe's attitude. Apparently, I can just, as a coach, I can just give 50%, and I'm not going to get fired because this other cut that I'm going to play you absolutely sounds like the words of a man who's coming back next year.
Take a listen. I talked about this the other day. This was a dream scenario to be in games like this. No one had us here. Most people projected us seventh in the division. No one had us in the playoffs.
I'm going to stop right there for a moment if I could, though. Nobody had us in the, you know, above seventh in the division. I believe you and I on this radio show very much said that this was a team that was expected to be fighting for a wild card at the last week or so of the season.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that were expecting a lot because it's been 7 years. This is the seventh season where they haven't made the playoffs. And there's been a lot of growth. Yzerman can no longer use the excuse, well, I'm dealing with the old regime. I'm dealing with Kenny Holland's draft picks and what he's traded away.
Yeah, you're long beyond that now.
Yeah.
I already am not liking this. It gets worse from here, though.
Again, not a knock on our group. That was the division. That's the conference. To have an opportunity right here, we may not be here next year. You look at some of these lineups and teams are growing, you know, not to mention other names, but I don't foresee New Jersey not flirting with 100 points. There's teams around us.
So he's talking trash about other teams.
No, he's talking positive about other teams. Apparently New Jersey can expect to just make 100 points.
Oh, he can
points.
Expect. I thought he said
We can't expect the Wings to even be in contention for a wild card spot next year. Get gone. Get gone now, Lalonde. I'm done with this.
Even if you have to lie to me. Just lie to me. Say that we're going to give it our best. We're going to be at the top of the league. We're going for the Stanley Cup. Brush off a spot on the mantle. But it's,
we don't even know that we're going to be in this position next year. You're already basically on pace to not make the playoffs. You're not going to be in a position to do that. You're going to be worse next year? How is that acceptable in any way, shape, or form? How has Yzerman not already written this guy a pink slip and shoved him out into the Detroit River?
Because the Detroit Red Wings organization as a whole has been about respect. They let Dave Lewis finish out his season before he was let go. They let Blashill finish that out before they let him go.
They
shouldn't have. But they're not going to be the type like a Lou Lamoriello who, you know, just will cut bait with a coach in the middle of a period.
You know what? I would take that right now.
I know. But you are of the let's watch the world burn kind of mentality.
Yes.
And
that's
not Detroit Red Wings are loyal to a fault. To everybody in the organization.
Clearly, hence things like Danny Cleary being signed here through like age 60.
He's a scout. How is he hurting you as a scout?
As a player that you signed at least 10 years beyond his actual usefulness as a hockey player.
That was Kenny Holland, but yeah.
I know, but this organization is overly loyal, too much so.
Well, to the point where, can't play, we're going to put you in the front office somewhere. We're going to create a position for you. But, you know, so they're not going to can him. They're definitely not going to can him now. There's only four games left.
Well, obviously they're not now, but during that big losing streak, the total collapse this team had, a coaching change there might have actually gotten you into that wild card spot, because it's pretty obvious when you're listening to a guy who is as completely lifeless as Derek Lalonde is going out there talking about, oh, well, we can't even expect to be this good next year. I mean, the rest of the league is going to surpass us really quickly, and I don't even talk to the players after games or anything. Like, why are you here? Why are you even in this position right now?
Yeah, I really like what's his name, number 23? I hit that guy. Yeah, he did a good job.
I'll remember his name eventually.
Something or other. Anyway, I got it's a happy hour at Applebee's. See you later, guys.
Like, the lack of urgency.
Well, what's that one place in Pittsburgh you guys like? Permani?
From Permani's.
We're going to Permani's. We'll see you later.
don't you dare slander the good name of Permani Brothers, sir.
That's where Lalonde's going. But yeah, I mean, you're telling the fan base who has been very impatient. They're already calling for Steve Yzerman's head, and I'd never thought I would see that happen. I would have thought they would have blamed everybody down to the rink manager before they would put Steve Yzerman on blast, but that is not the case. Have you seen some of the still photos of him glaring at the game? If looks could kill.
Oh, absolutely. I'm amazed they haven't yet. I'm amazed they haven't killed him yet. I mean, at the very least, that look looks like he should have been actually fired midseason, but they just will not.
Well, I mean, it's pretty obvious that, I mean, okay, positive time, silver lining here.
Oh, here he goes.
This was a better season than it was previous year, but you can't, it's like they let off the gas. Oh, well, we already surpassed our quota. We're good. We made it to first base. Why run past the bag?
Very much so.
Yeah, we've surpassed expectations. So good. Let's regroup. Let's just coast through the rest of the season. I'm not saying this from a player standpoint. I'm saying from a front office standpoint. Yzerman included. I don't think Yzerman's at all happy about this. I'm not going to throw him on the fire either. But
I mean, apparently he was going in there and kicking the trash cans that Lalonde won't.
I heard that. I just don't hear that in Steve Yzerman ever. I mean, I can imagine him just like, you know, taking a foot and just rapidly hitting a Rubbermaid trash can. Boom.
I mean, he's got
Oh, Yzerman's mad. Boom. Guys, I want to talk to you guys. Boom. This is ridiculous.
He's got a little more fire in him, apparently, than a lot of us give him credit for from everything that we've heard coming out of this organization.
Yeah.
And
it must be behind closed doors, because anytime I've ever seen him like really get overexcited about anything was when he wins the Stanley Cup.
Right.
Everything else is just like, I mean, even when he was talking about this big rabble-rousing kind of speech he had in a locker room that every player in the 1997 Stanley Cup playoffs was talking about. Yzerman sat us all down and really sparked the team, and Yzerman was just like, I just said we need to play better. Way to go, Stevie.
Well, he just like downplays himself quite a bit, apparently, but you know,
yeah, that could be.
He seems like that guy when presenting a public persona. Like, he's never going to be a torts out in front of cameras, in front of the media ever.
No.
But maybe he is that guy in the locker room, in the clubhouse, and when there's not cameras on him. It sounds like very much that might be the case.
That reminds me of the old SNL sketch where Phil Hartman's playing Ronald Reagan, and he's like, oh, well, you're doing a great job over here, meeting with a bunch of Girl Scouts, and then finally the Girl Scouts leave. All right, back to business, come on! So, yeah, when the cameras are off and the doors are locked to the dressing room, Yzerman just, like, pulls out a big old cricket bat and just starts swinging at players. Oh, now you move fast, Petrie. Now you move fast. Come here. Stop crying. What's going on in there? Oh, Yzerman is just addressing the team.
Yeah, he just went and said we need to play better.
Lalonde, assume the position. Squinting.
Well,
so, yeah, I mean, I don't agree with Lalonde. I mean, I agree with him about this season, that some people had them in the dumpster, because I know ESPN didn't give them a whisper of a chance.
Well, ESPN doesn't know anything about hockey.
They really don't. They still don't. But, I mean, us fans, we know what we've got. We know what we see. We expected this or better. We were hoping for better, but we got this. For him to say, well, it's probably going to be this way again next year. No, it's not. It should not be.
That is absolutely unacceptable.
It's a negative way of looking at your job.
Yeah, basically, I was terrible this year, and I'm going to be terrible next year, too. Then you don't need to be here. Like,
he's already booking a cruise in May.
Oh, I'm sure.
May of next year. He's legitimately tanking the team. Well, I got a timeshare.
You know, wouldn't put it past him at this point.
Somebody said it was a deal that I just couldn't pass up.
God. Oh, we've got a lot yet to get to today that doesn't involve the Red Wings, because I don't think we could really stomach a full show of just nothing but this.
Nope.
We'll get to Piston stuff, Lion stuff, and you know, have some time to goof around on the side as well. And a little bit of announcement to do later on in the show. It is happy hour. Stick around. It is happy hour, and I kind of wanted to get into this from a little bit earlier in the week. It seems like, for the most part, well, the vast majority of the Lions fan base and even the media has had fairly positive things to say about one Jared Goff. I mean, he's been, the last couple years, he's been everything you could have really asked for, ultimately. But apparently he feels he's being slighted in some way.
Oh,
that he's
no.
being, I don't know what podcast this was on, he's talked about it, but he thinks, I guess, that the media are particularly negative about him. So he goes on this podcast hosted by, I guess, one of his former teammates, some guy I've never heard of. And the podcast ran just short of 90 minutes. Goff talked about the trade and his immediate reactions and feelings, how he's grown as a person, player, and leader in his three seasons with Detroit, and said that his, he said a few positive things about the team, how, you know, it was one of the better things that happened to him, getting traded here, but particular the media thing. Quote, it's so ingrained in the culture there to be a sports fan and to raise your kids to root for the Lions and Tigers, whoever it may be. That's been so fun for me to be a part of, yada, yada, yada. But I have this, like, I probably need to drop here pretty soon because hopefully I'm going to be in Detroit for a long time. But I have this thing with our local media where they almost, like, relish in negativity at times. And maybe that's what gets clicks and that's what sells, but it's no longer what they need to live in. Like, hey, guys, we have a good team. We've had success. So apparently, that was sparked from a question about his interaction with a local reporter at a news conference before the NFC title game. He was asked about San Francisco's star-laden roster compared to Detroit's. He answered by reminding that both Amon-Ra St. Brown and Penei Sewell were first-team All-Pro, and it wasn't a fluke that they ended up in that game against the Niners. Quote, we can be happy about that, we can celebrate that, and not have to write about how we're constantly the underdog. Like, no, teams are probably going to be gunning for us now, we won the division and all that, and I'm probably overthinking it in my head because it's the chip on my shoulder and the competitor in me. In that moment, I was just giving that guy a hard time. I actually really like him. Like, yeah. I mean, I will certainly agree that we've been conditioned here, and certainly those of us who have had to cover this team for a living at any point have certainly been conditioned to think in the negative when it comes to the Lions, because of course we have.
SOL. Should be trademarked.
It's really, it's so ingrained in the culture here because you've had 5 or 6 decades where winning just isn't really a thing that happens. Playoff wins never happen. And you don't, I don't think he entirely realizes just how crazy it is what he and his team managed to do just since he's been here in actually winning 2 playoff games. Like, you doubled in one season the number of playoff wins that had happened in the previous 60.
Yep.
Like, it's kind of a thing here. We're kind of used to being let down by this team. The fan base, the media, certainly. I mean, obviously, we'd like to have positive things to talk about. Like, the media here, honestly, as far as these things go, fairly, they have a fairly light touch when it comes to most of the franchises. Quite frankly, there's a lot of them that don't get the scrutiny from a lot of places that perhaps they should.
I don't know. I think in this day and age, and Goff touched on it, clicks. They want clickbaiting. So, and they know what's going to get the negative, what's going to get the most clicks is negative, negative reviews, negative feedback.
Well, that's in everything. I mean, you look on YouTube, the videos that like get all the hits are like
watch to the
negative
end, this person. Yeah, watch what happens.
The
to this
stunning
poor
downfall of insert celebrity here. Like, it's always things like that. I think it's just a human nature thing, man.
Well, no, it's that has gone since print newspapers. If it bleeds, it leads. I mean, I got into it with a certain Dave Bondi.
Because
he was talking about
But he keeps it real, don't you?
He keeps
you know?
It real by using some stock photo of empty grocery shelves. Oh, how is this affecting your family? Blah, blah, blah. And I showed him a picture of a fully stocked shelf at my work with the date. So here you go, Dave. Well, it's not my job. It is your job. Your job is to report.
Well, no, his job now is to carry water for the Mackinac Center, but that's a whole other thing.
I may have called him Chicken Little.
Well, you know, sometimes that just needs to happen. I mean,
but for the last 30, 40 years, everybody says the 3 toughest jobs in Detroit is the mayor of Detroit, quarterback for the Lions, and the goalie for the Red Wings. And that's never going
to
stop.
Yeah, that's never going to change. Like, you're always going to be under that scrutiny here. And even so, like, it's still, I guarantee you, it's not like the scrutiny that you'd get in, say, a Philly, a New York, a Boston. I mean, granted,
exactly.
you're coming from L.A. where they don't even know they have a football team, much less that they have two football teams. So I understand that the media's not paying attention to you at all there. But trust me, compared to what you get in Detroit, it could be far, far worse.
Yes.
We got to hit a break, though. It is happy hour at your local alternative Solid State Radio. Okay. It is happy hour, and it's that time of the week again as we pause from our normal roasting of your local sports teams to try and dispense some advice to those who are in desperate, dire need of it. Yes, it's time once again for Sean and Ab's Unsolicited Advice, where real people with real problems send real questions to real advice columnists. Unfortunately for them, we get our hands on them, we intercept, and quite frankly, we do this better, I think, than the people who get paid to do this crap for a living.
Agreed.
So let's go ahead and dive right in, shall we?
Yes.
Dear anybody other than Sean and Adam, I'm a mom to two boys, Will, who is 20, and James, who is 18. James has always been a nice, shy, rule-following kid, a bit of a goody-two-shoes even. I always assumed at some point he would break out of his shell and rebel. However, that has never happened, and now I'm wondering if I should be worried. James is a first year at the same college his brother attends. I've been trying to encourage Will to bring James to parties with him and get him to enjoy himself and make the most of all that college has to offer. Unfortunately, Will says James isn't interested. Instead, he likes to focus on his schoolwork and G-rated hobbies like reading and playing the piano. He has a thing for someone in one of his classes, but is too nervous to approach. I don't think he's ever gotten drunk or high or had sex. I look back at my own college years and have fond memories of the freedom of student life. I'm sad that James might not have these same experiences. I'm also slightly worried because it's normal and healthy for kids his age to rebel. Makes me wonder if there's something I should be concerned about. Could he be depressed? Have we not done enough as parents to ensure it's safe and encourage for him to rebel? Is he just a late bloomer?
Ah, honey, he is rebelling. You probably show up drunk at the house about 5 days a week, and he's like, "Well, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go that route. I think I just want to concentrate on school. You know, I'm tired of the electricity being shut off every 90 days. I'm tired of you keep talking about how great things were in college and everything else, and how drunk. I just want to sit back." Play piano, and how do you know he doesn't have a girlfriend or anything like that? Maybe he wants a boyfriend. I mean, come on now.
Well, it does mention in the letter that apparently there is a guy that he's interested in that he hasn't.
Okay, yeah. So I mean,
he has a thing for a guy in one of his classes. Well, but it's too nervous to approach.
I mean, there's still a stigma when it comes to homosexuality. I mean,
sure.
that's just a fact of it.
Unfortunately,
so she's telling the older brother, come on.
Go get him drunk.
Get him laid. Come on. What are big brothers for?
It does really seem like she's kind of pushing that, isn't she?
But for, James, he calls home. Hi, it's James. Oh my God. How much bail money do we need? Oh my God. Where are you? Are you okay? Have you been in an accident? No, everything's fine. Oh, all right. She's all depressed.
She's so disappointed by that, and that's kind of hilarious.
She's at happy hour at Applebee's right next to Lalone, and she and her girlfriends are like, Tiffany called me up, and she needs more bail money because she's over at Stanford, and she just got completely she's flunking out because she spends all the time getting high and everything else, and the writer's just like, oh, why can't that be Mike? Why can't you be more like Tiffany?
Why can't you go get trashed and get in a bar fight? What are you even doing? What are you doing with your life?
Hi, Mom. Me and my piano. We're on the honor roll. We're on the dean's list. Well, whoop-de-doo. Do you even know? I'm trying to think of something that's real PG. Do you even know what a trash can party is, son? Do you even know what a trash can party? No, you probably don't, because you're wasting 4 years of your life, son. You need to really buckle down. Here, I'm gonna uncap this Pabst Blue Ribbon, and you're gonna chug the entire thing, or you're not leaving this dinner table, young man. Dinner table? Okay, card table.
Just set down a can of PBR. Like,
a tall you're
gonna
boy.
You're gonna shotgun this whole thing, or you're not welcome back in this house, son.
I don't care if you know the chemical makeup of Jägermeister. I want you to drink it.
Tell me what the chemical mixture of Jaeger and Red Bull is. Yeah, bet you can't.
What do you have to see? Gandalf doing some body shots for you to be willing to do it?
None shall pass.
Why, what do we got to do here? You got to see Doctor Who doing a keg stand? I mean, come on.
Whatever works for him, I guess. I'm just amazed by all of this, really, quite frankly.
I know. What the brass cojones of this mother.
That your kid's being too good and actually applying themselves and isn't going to come out of college with a drinking problem like his parents probably did. You know, she's got such fond memories of, you know, waking up at noon the next day, still feeling like just total garbage and cracking open some hair of the dog. I just made me a Bloody Mary and got back at it because that's what you do when you're an adult, son.
Yeah, it was a sophomore Bloody Mary. It was Campbell's tomato soup and Zima.
I was thinking V8 and, you know, whatever, Crystal Palace vodka or something, but that's too rich for her blood, apparently.
Oh, I said sophomore, not junior.
Because, by the time you're
VA can, VA can's like what, $1.49? The thing of Campbell's soup is like 48 cents.
That's very true. Yeah, gotta be budget conscious. You haven't yet graduated to 5 o'clock, I guess.
You woke up at noon, you only had 3 classes, and you missed all 3 of them. I guess my advice to the writer would be simply shut up.
Yeah, let your kid explore college at their own pace. I've never can I remember coming across someone who was like disappointed that their kid didn't apply themselves and spend all their time partying at college. Like this is uncharted territory here.
Yes, I have no idea what you're trying to go for here.
No, none whatsoever. Let your kid play his piano, maybe eventually find him a nice boyfriend, and trying to keep this PG and play piano together, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, let's delve into another one of these, shall we?
Yeah.
Dear, oh God, not them, anybody but them. I've been with my girlfriend Chrissy for almost 2 years. We live together in our mid-20s. We've both been working and have been able to pay our expenses and even save a little money towards getting a better apartment. Chrissy lost her job just before Christmas. She quit because she felt the environment was toxic and she basically hated it. I don't blame her for hating her job at all. I would have hated it too. Unfortunately, she quit before she had a new job, and is now 3 months later and she hasn't looked at all. We've gone through our savings and I can just barely pay our expenses. Chrissy now says she would like to be a stay-at-home girlfriend. She doesn't want to work. I'm not sure what to do. Any ideas?
Dump her. Next. No, I mean,
wait. I thought I'm supposed to be the one that, like, cut off no contact. Like, Adam's on my side on this?
Yeah, dump her. Next. Who's next? Now serving. No, I've been in this situation. I worked with somebody. I met somebody at work. You know, you never, how do I put this? Never dip into the company ink. So we started dating. We ended up moving in together. We got engaged. And it was the same kind of situation. You know, hopefully she's not listening to the show because she might kill me. Next thing you know, she was telling me, point blank, I mean, points for honesty. She says, I want to be a stay-at-home wife. I don't care how many jobs you need to work to make things happen, but this is the way it is. This is what I want for my life. And when I said I wasn't cool with that, all of a sudden she was ill. Doctors couldn't figure out what was wrong with her. She was ill. Couldn't go to work. And at that point, I was making $8 an hour. And even though my dad owned the place and our rent was like, I think my rent was like $200 a month, something like that.
Yeah.
We were having a hard time making that, plus groceries. And it was just, I would come home and she would just, I'd be tired from work and she'd be up all day not doing anything. And so finally I was like, "This, we are not on the same page with what we want in life." I grew up in a life where both parents worked. And I think that is a healthy way to go about it, especially in today's day and age. We don't have that lifestyle anymore where one person can work and you need that two people income. So I left. Lo and behold, as soon as I left, she can go back to work. She's back to work. It's fantastic. Oh, miraculous recovery. Then she meets another guy at work who was a team leader at our places of employment. They got married, and the weekend of their honeymoon, she became ill and couldn't go to work.
You don't say.
She kept telling people, instead of like, oh, I can't wait to take his name. I can't wait to spend the rest of my life. I can't wait to marry my best friend. She's like, I can't wait to get on his insurance.
That's, you know, all the things that you really, really think about when you're madly in love with somebody totally just marrying them to be a free ride.
So this writer really needs to set her down and say, listen, this is not what I signed up for. This isn't working. We've gone through my savings. You're not bringing in anything financially, which, I mean, I'm not looking to see you as a kid. I'm seeing you as an equal. You need to figure something out. For her to quit a job because of a toxic environment, I'm all about that. But I'm also of the mindset that you keep the toxic work environment job until you find another job. As opposed to, she's like, well, because we know somebody who his first marriage, she would work a job for a couple of days and then quit because the boss didn't smile at her.
What?
Yeah, I'll tell you that off the air. Worked at KFC 2 days and said, well, I quit because the boss didn't smile at her.
Wow. I don't even ever had a boss that smiled at me, and nor when I've been a boss, I don't think I've ever smiled at anybody, including you. So
yeah. If I have a boss smile at me, it's like, oh, clean out everything out of my locker. Gotcha.
Yep, that's the assumption I operate under as well.
Just want to let you know you've been a valuable member of the team. Oh, I'm getting canned, aren't I?
Every time.
The nicest that program director for Wings 103 was when he canned me over the phone.
Poor Adam.
It wasn't his call. It's okay, Zach. We're good.
We forgive you. Yeah. Maybe. Well, we'll forgive you if you show up here in July, but that's a whole other
thing
altogether. Yeah, I can't say I've ever been in that position. If anything, I as much as I would love to quit and be a stay-at-home husband, we can't afford for that to be the case. We need the income. And I work in radio, so Rachel will never be able to quit and be a stay-at-home wife.
Yeah. Well, I could see you in a full apron. Her coming home, just throwing a briefcase on the table, and you just mixing her a drink, having her sit down. How was everything, hon? Rubbing her feet, cooking her dinner. I could see that happening.
I don't know if my bartending skills would be enough to justify that in her mind.
Uncapping a beer or something like that.
I can make a mighty fine cocktail. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I know, but the thing is you start making her a cocktail. One for her, one for me, one for
I don't see the issue.
Then you burn the roast.
You say that like I can't cook and bartend drunk.
And you try to rub her feet, you end up falling asleep in the middle of it. She ends up kicking you in the head.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time.
No,
I guess you should put Rachel on the apology list. Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, that's right. 1 year being married.
1 year for not asking me for a divorce.
That's right. Wow. Congratulations.
And what's my anniversary gift to her? A bunch of booze and a spot on the apology list.
Well, Dorothy and Rachel should basically be just permanently on there. Anyway, very long story short. Dumper.
Yeah, it's never going to work. Like, if she's already of the mind that, well, you're just going to stay at home, or I'm just going to stay at home, you're just going to provide for me. No, I mean, quite frankly, that's not really a feasible thing for most people, especially when there's not kids involved. Like, there's some expectation that, okay, you're going to be a stay-at-home mom, that's one thing, but, like, unless you're just going to be obsessively cleaning the house, and in our case, there ain't that much house to clean, so I don't think either one of us could justify taking a permanent vacation for that.
Right, right.
There's no way that's going to work or that's going to make any sense. She's just trying to prepare you now that you're going to be doing all the heavy lifting from here on out, and the sooner you kick her to the curb, quite frankly, the better.
Exactly.
On that note, let's hit a break. It is Happy Hour at Solid State Radio. It is Happy Hour, and well, you look at that. The Pistons are terrible. We didn't have to touch on that. They set their I know we don't have anything else to get to on the show today.
Like, wait. I'm afraid, Sean, I've ruined your day yet again. It's been a long time. It's been laying dormant, just like the cicadas.
The Pistons?
Much like the Pistons. I'm afraid I must torture you once again, first time in a long time, with This List is Trash.
Oh, lovely. This segment that I totally love doing and don't at all hate.
No.
But always seem to win at every time we've ever done it.
Now, brown nosing will not get you out of this. So,
that's fine.
I have 24 entries on the board. Entertainment Weekly has had ranked, this is coming from 2023, top 24 SNL cast members.
Haven't we done this list
before?
We've done
a lot of them. Keep rolling. sports movies, woo, that's a real thinker.
Serial mascots, we've never done that on the show before.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my. We're breaking new ground today on the broadcast, apparently.
Yes, we have done this, but I found it from a different source, so maybe they shake it up a little bit. And it's also from 2023, so there are some more current cast members involved.
I can say I feel fairly confident that there's not going to be any new cast members that make it to this.
The current cast members,
because there's not a whole lot of great stuff currently coming out of this cast.
I beg to differ. There's some great stuff coming out of SNL, but we can have that argument.
But all
later.
That's Weekend Update and nothing else.
Exactly. Spoiler alert. Jost and Che are not on the list. That's total BS.
This list is trash.
This list is trash. And good night, everybody. All right, you're stalling. 1 through 24, go.
I know, I like doing that. So let's go. We'll start classic, though.
Okay.
How about John Belushi?
Number 8.
Only number 8, huh?
Yeah.
All right. We'll stick with original cast, Dan Aykroyd.
Did you say Dave Aykroyd?
Dan Aykroyd,
number 7.
Okay, Bill Murray.
Bill Murray comes in at number 3. Quite low, honestly. I like me some Bill Murray.
That's fair. Okay, so presumably, unless this list was voted on by people who worked with him, Chevy Chase should be on the list.
Chevy Chase is not on the list.
Okay, so that confirms my
theory. He was only
on
there for one season.
But it was a pretty good season.
Well, yeah, the first season was always going
to
be good.
You see, apparently they're very committed to not bringing him back for the Community movie.
Really?
Like, 6 seasons in a movie and he will not be involved in that movie.
That is a heartbreaker because I love just about everything I've ever seen Chevy Chase in, but I've heard from everybody
that he's just a terrible human being.
He's a D-bag is what he is.
Pretty much.
The thing is, if he was like a complete a-hole to me, I'm like, yeah, thank you, Mr. Chase. Like, oh, Chevy Chase was just a complete jerk to me. Oh, my God. High five.
We absolutely would be that way. Okay, let's go a little further down, shall we? Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy, scrolling.
He has to be at least in the top 5.
Scrolling. You're not going to believe this.
He's not on the list?
Number 1.
Okay, I can't believe that. He basically carried the show by himself for 5 years.
Him and Piscopo. After the original cast left, it was him and Piscopo that kept that thing afloat.
Right.
And yeah.
I mean, they desperately, like, it was in dire straits that after Lorne Michaels and the whole original cast left.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not.
We had such high hopes for Charlie Rocket.
And then he dropped that right away, like he dropped that F-bomb at the end of that episode.
That's right.
The whole Dallas thing. Like, I'd like to know who the blank did it.
Yeah, right. So, you are doing well. I hate it.
I know you do. How about, well, I feel like you're going to disagree with me on this, but Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell, I love. Will Ferrell comes in at number 6.
Like, I don't, like, his bits on the show, I mean, especially Celebrity Jeopardy, of course, the George W., like, he might be the best of the presidential impersonators to come through that show.
What I love is that he could play, like, the guy who gets all the jokes, like, all I can think of is the Sean William Scott episode where the dress code says you dress up in American stuff, and he shows up in like an American flag Speedo. I mean,
right.
But with the celebrity, he was a straight man. He was Trebek, but he was still just as funny.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's stick with like 90s. Let's stick with that era. In fact, let's stick with Celebrity Jeopardy. Is Daryl Hammond on the list?
Yes. Yes, he is. Who has graciously, ever since Don Pardo died, he has graciously taken over as the voiceover guy. Daryl Hammond, quite frankly, my favorite Bill Clinton.
He did arguably the best Bill Clinton. Who did it before him?
Was it Phil Hartman?
Was it Hartman? Is Phil Hartman on the list? He should be. If he's not, this list is trash. And I was like, I have tactically screwed up here.
Yeah, number two.
But I mean, you can't argue with it, though. I mean, no. He was absolutely one of the best cast members that show has ever seen. A guy who like didn't have to be the lead guy to be absolutely hilarious.
He does great work, and yeah,
there's nothing he's been in that hasn't been absolutely rock solid funny.
But yeah, I'm just glad to see Daryl Hammond get some love in this list from Entertainment
Weekly.
You
should. Speaking of people who have been there forever, Kenan Thompson, is he on the list?
Yes, he is, number 12.
I mean, I like a lot of the stuff he does too. Like he's pretty good as far as like the impersonations and, you know, being just kind of the guy that does everything now.
Yes.
On that show.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he is the journeyman, and he does well. It's not like he's tired or anything like that. He's actually having fun with it still.
Yeah. How about let's get is Adam Sandler on the list?
Number 16.
Like, obviously, I'm not a fan of much of his latter day output. I feel like a lot of people probably aren't.
There's a few things that I've liked. I've liked Sandy Wexler. I like The Ridiculous Six. They're just fun Sunday afternoon movies. They're not anything to like really write home about, but they're fun.
I mean, he has some great movies in the 90s.
Oh, some of the best. Some of the best. Happy Gilmore. I mean, he had the trifecta. It was like Happy Gilmore.
Billy Madison.
And
Wedding Singer.
Wedding Singer, yeah.
I still love all three of those. But as far as the SNL stuff goes,
Canteen Boy.
Canteen Boy is pretty... Okay, I'll give you that one. I didn't need to see him crash Weekend Update with another, you know,
opera
Cajun man, opera man, something man.
You know what? And so many people love when the guest speakers come in, guest quote-unquote speakers come on Weekend Update. I kind of like tune out. Especially since nowadays it's all Bo and Yang, but you know.
He does like every single guest on that segment.
Oh, there's going to be a new episode. There's going to be a cicada on the episode, and it's going to be Bo and Yang. I'm calling my shot right now.
I feel like that's entirely probable.
Yep.
How about Andy Samberg?
Right on top of Adam Sandler, that's where he likes it. Number 15.
I mean, the Lonely Island stuff was pretty fantastic. Like, those are some of the better film pieces that show's ever had.
Yeah, that's just it. Like, he would do some sketches and it'd be okay. But when he was left to his own devices, like his stuff with Natalie Portman was hilarious. It's like what the Please Don't Destroy gang are doing now on SNL, which is a high point of the current episodes.
Yeah.
That was Andy Samberg. And then when Andy Samberg and Adam Sandler teamed up for That's My Boy, another movie that's just kind of dismissible, but enjoyable at the same time. It's not, you know, it's not ever going to be the funniest movie ever, but it's a fun watch.
I've never seen it. I'll have to go check it out.
Oh yeah,
but the digital shorts and things he did. I mean,
oh yes,
the one particularly the iconic one with him and
like a boss.
That one too, but the first big one he did with Chris Parnell, wasn't it? Lazy Sunday. Is he on the list, by the way?
Chris Parnell comes in at number 24.
Kind of surprised that he makes the list, but again, one of those guys like plays a better straight man than anybody in the business.
Oh, absolutely. Chris Parnell, I was worried that you weren't going to get him, and here you are right on top of it. I hate it.
I know. You hate this so much. It's fantastic.
So much.
Well, you'll hate me even more. Is Kate McKinnon on the list?
Kate McKinnon is at number 9. I sorely miss her. So right now, recapping, we're talking about the top 24 SNL cast members. And so far, Sean is knocking it out of the park. He's got number 1, 2, 3, Eddie Murphy, Phil Hartman, Bill Murray. He's got 6, 7, 8, 9, Will Ferrell, Dan Aykroyd, John Belushi, Kate McKinnon. Kenan Thompson at number 12. Sandberg, 15. Sandler at 16. Daryl Hammond at 17. And number 24, Chris Parnell. Now he's running out of... Folks, he's running out of steam. I don't know what
Am I, though?
I don't know what he's going to do with this.
Someone's got jokes over here, evidently.
Let's see what he does.
How about Kristen Wiig? She on the list?
Number 13. And this is... At this point, the host, Adam, is accusing him of cheating.
He usually does.
This is why I gotta stop telling you where I'm getting my source, because you're like click 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 click, and like oh,
hey. I haven't clicked on anything. You know what I got in front of me right now? The drops. That's what I have. Yeah, well, on my screen right now, Hair Huck.
All right, we'll drop this.
Nothing. All right, so how about let's go back to 80s era SNL.
Must have quit.
Dana Carvey.
Dana Carvey, number 10.
I mean, he had some of the best characters that year. Oh, Mike Myers.
Not on the list.
Really?
But, I mean, I get it. He had Wayne's World. He had a few other, like, straight man roles. But I'm sorry. I'm going to get some hate mail from this, and I'm okay with that. Mike Myers was a great Wayne Campbell from Wayne's World. But then what else? Dana Carvey? Church Lady.
Church Lady was great. His George Bush Sr. was fantastic.
Oh, my God. He was great. Oh, yeah. And then, like, the Chopping Broccoli.
Oh, God, that. This is such a stupid pit, but ended up being...
It became a gold.
Yeah, it really did.
All right.
How about... God, I am running out of names here.
Just got to shake the bee's nest a little bit.
David Spade?
David Spade does not come on the list, but stay with him.
Okay.
Well, big comedy partner with him.
Did I already guess Chris Farley?
You did not.
Well, I'm guessing Chris Farley then.
Number 11.
That seems criminally low.
Well, I mean, he was on the show for 4 years, but he was kind of a one-trick pony. I mean, he really was. I mean, you made fun of his fatness, his clumsiness, and then you moved on. Anyway, some of that was gold. That whole thing with Patrick Swayze with the Chippendales was classic. Instantly, easily, probably top 10 SNL classic moments. But after that, I mean, falling through a table here, falling through here, and I don't know.
I don't know. It never got not funny to me. How about Maya Rudolph? She on the list?
You are cheating.
I can't believe
you pulled Maya Rudolph. She comes in number 14. I can't believe you pulled Maya Rudolph right out of your keister.
Well, I did, and apparently other people agree with me on that one. So
she comes in number 14. So point taken.
Yeah, so I can't be doing that badly there.
All right,
she got a lot of impressions and things on her.
She's kind of like the go-to. Whitney Houston was hilarious.
Her Whitney Houston was fantastic. She has a mighty fine Michelle Obama.
She did.
Like, she was kind of the go-to for any female character, pretty much.
I almost want you to go rapid fire, because I want to bitch about people who aren't on the list.
Okay, one that I'd put on, and it seems really timely with the events that have happened this week. Norm MacDonald, is he on the list?
Not on the list.
That's this list is trash. Best weekend update anchor ever, and I will fight anyone who says otherwise.
All right.
Murder is legal in the state of California.
He's probably at the pearly gates. No, that's not going to happen.
No, not so much. Well, at least the real killer's dead now. So he can rest easy, I suppose. About old McGruber himself? Will Forte, he on the list?
Yes, number 18.
Love that. I can't believe they actually made a full movie out of that.
I've never seen it. I couldn't bring myself to watch that one.
I haven't yet either. Like, I love the sketches on SNL, but I can't imagine that playing out over a full movie.
The one episode where they bring in Betty White to host, and she plays his grandma, and the bomb's about to take off, and she's like, he's like, "Grandma, will you marry me?" And she's like, "Are you crazy?" "Yes." And an explosion. Right?
All right, let's see if I can rapid fire this. Bill Hader, is he on the list?
Bill Hader, number 4. Sorely missed. I mean, now he's dead. I miss him on the show.
Jason Sudeikis?
Jason Sudeikis comes in at number 23. Michigan guy, by the way.
I always forget about that. What was there? A.D. Bryant.
A.D. Bryant. Why, you are cheating.
I am doing no such thing.
Number 22.
Well, sticking that same note then, Cicely Strong.
Number 20. Sorry, I miss her a lot.
Yeah, they've never really managed to particularly effectively replace those three.
Yep.
Fred Armisen, would he be on the list?
Fred Armisen is on there.
What am I missing?
You're missing two women, and neither one of them are with us anymore. One's from the 70s, one's from the 80s.
Gilda Radner?
Gilda Radner, number five.
Who's the other one that's not with us? Victoria Jackson? No, it's just her career.
Wow.
Jan Hooks.
Jan Hooks, and there you go. Nicely done. I hate it.
I know you do. I love surprising you with that every time we do this bit.
But, like, no Tina Fey. Tina Fey's
well,
not
Tina
on there.
Well, Tina Fey didn't have a whole lot outside of the Weekend Update. Like, there weren't any people who were primarily just Weekend Update people.
But you know what's good? Is we didn't see Jimmy Fallon.
Yep. And for that, maybe this list isn't so trash after all. We'll come back and wrap this thing up next. It is Happy Hour. Stick around. It is happy hours. We get set to wrap things up here on a Friday afternoon. And while we kind of alluded to it in the last segment, you've heard the news by now, no doubt. Noted murderer and football player O.J. Simpson died yesterday.
Yeah.
The first, like, big celebrity, like, trial of the cable news era, really.
Yeah.
Of the 24-hour news cycle,
well,
such
I mean,
as it
I,
is.
I mean, I think Judge Ito died, and it was like, oh, okay, yeah, he's dead. But it's, yeah, he died, and what kills me is like, famed running back, he was a running back, was it? Famed running back, and accused killer, dead. They had to put that accused killer, I mean, because that's what everybody knows him about. For.
I mean, it
wasn't for the Naked Gun movies, I'll tell you that much.
Right? I mean, right, wrong, or indifferent. And he was, like, a big, like, he had gotten a pretty big celebrity, like, for the TV stuff, you know, the Hertz commercials and whatnot, and the Naked Gun movies, like, in the 80s. Mm-hmm. But, like, then that happened, and that kind of overshadows, like, he was the star of his own live TV car chase.
Yeah, I remember that in 1994. All of a sudden, everything shut down, and everybody's watching this... This car chase.
Wasn't it like the NBA Finals or something? And they literally just, like, minimized the screen. Like, you could kind of make out the game in the corner, and they're just, like, televising the car chase live.
April of 94, I believe. Was it April? I think it might have been the playoffs. But, they preempted everything. And I didn't even know what was going on. This is, like, before internet news.
Right. You think it was the Kennedy assassination or something.
Yeah, I didn't know that, you know... Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman had been killed like it was like a week prior, and they were telling him to surrender himself to LAPD, and he was like, "Nope, I'm going for a joyride with AJ."
Yeah, that's that clearly the several bad decisions that led up to that point.
Yeah, but I just remember when he was acquitted, and I was. It really shook me.
The NBA Finals.
It was the finals, wow.
They actually interrupted coverage of the NBA Finals. And
picture in picture. You know what?
Yep. And it would have been, June 17th, 1994.
June, okay. Who was in the NBA Finals that year?
That would have been the Knicks and Houston, I think.
Wow, New York was still in there. Okay, so I'm thinking, it was just like was it Portland and Milwaukee or something like that?
Right. The Houston Rockets and the New York Knicks.
That's a good matchup. But I remember when he was acquitted, because the whole trial was a big rigmarole. They had, you know, the lawyers coming. It came to find out the lawyers were telling Juice, hey, listen, don't take your arthritis medicine because we want your hand to swell. It's like, oh, the glove doesn't fit. Oh, look at this. Oh, so then why'd you take the dome light out of your car and it's covered in blood? Oh, well, you know, reasons. But I remember when he was acquitted, I was in the studio at Wings 103, and it didn't really affect me much, but the woman I was interning for, she was kind of, she had come from a battered house. So she really took it hard to where she didn't finish her shift that day. Somebody had to come in and fill in the rest of her air shift. She's just like, there's no justice. I can't say exactly what she said, but she was like, there's no justice, blah, blah, blah. PD had to come in and finish her shift. And it struck a chord with a lot of people.
Like, I don't think there's possibly not even since has there been a trial which so many people were so invested in as this. Certainly not before this.
Nope. I mean, the Michael Jackson thing, everybody looked at that as a joke. It wasn't like, okay, people... I mean, there were some lives who were altered forever. There's no doubt about that.
Right. People have been making jokes about that for a decade prior, so it didn't carry quite the same weight ultimately when they got around to, you know, having the trial. But like this was like, you couldn't get away with it. It's on the news. It's on the late night talk shows. It's on every morning radio show. Anyone could talk about.
Well, I mean, you weren't born yet, but the Iran-Contra thing, that those trials preempted everything. There was no daytime TV during the summer. There were no anything else. It was, we had to rely on the VCR because it was all Ollie North. So, and then that same year, it was all OJ. It was all OJ and Marsha Clark and
Johnny Cochran.
Johnny Cochran. If the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. Well, now, if you are of the religious type, you're realizing that the juice is now being squeezed. Because everybody's like, well, what's he going to say to Nicole Brown Simpson when he sees him in heaven? I'm like, well.
Bold of you to assume he's going to make it to heaven.
like you made the mention when we were talking about SNL. I was thinking, like, was Norm Macdonald waiting for him at the pearly gates just to kind of give him a slammer when he came in? Nope, I don't think the juice is there.
No, I imagine not. Although, you know, it's interesting, though. I've been hearing a lot of things this week, you know, conspiracies about, oh, maybe he didn't actually, that it really wasn't him. And honestly, there's one that sounded kind of plausible. They're saying that one theory that's been floated around, and, you know, we've already got enough shows on our terrestrial affiliate that like to delve into the conspiracy realm. Why not us get on it, too? That apparently his son was kind of built around, built pretty similarly to the old man, worked in as a chef at a kitchen somewhere, and was not the most mentally stable fella. The theory goes, apparently, that he did it, and OJ was basically covered for him, and was going to, well, take the fall for him if he had to, and just swore to seek, you know, to his grave. Because, and the other reason for that was, messy crime scene, to say the least, for the amount of blood that was found in the Bronco was not what you would expect having him come off of that. Where would he have changed the clothes that because he'd be drenched, obviously.
And, yeah, that's true.
Like, there is, like, you know, when you put it that way, there is kind of maybe something to that.
There was a lot of those facts that made it to where it was a hung jury. And
They
weren't able to convict.
And apparently there were a couple murders that went on at that same restaurant where Ron Goldman worked. Like, the year before, there had been a murder involving someone who worked there. And then there was another one that would come up a year after. So that there's very much another possible whole separate thing that could have resulted in that.
Yeah, I guess that's it. Because Ron Goldman worked at La Luna... Mayor Luna or whatever, a restaurant, and he was delivering. First of all, have you ever met a waiter that would, oh, here's somebody that left her glasses. I'm going to drive it back to her house. Come on, man.
No one believes that. But also, if you're a waiter and you somehow managed to pull like the wife of a former NFL player, like that's impressive in and of itself.
Well, she was a looker. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Oh, she left her glasses. I guess.
Gotta go, guys.
Right.
Wish me luck.
Right.
Cut it up, bud. Oh. And here. And, you know, service industry people get so looked down on nowadays. Apparently it's a little bit different out in L.A. Who knew? On that note, we got a little bit of business to take care of in our weekly attempt to cleanse our souls. Happy Hour would like to apologize to Derek Malone, Jeff Blashill, Steve Eiserman, Dave Bondi, Applebee's, and Rachel. We are sorry. On that that note, stick around. An hour of local original something or other is up next on a little show we like to call Sessions. Who's your musical guest tonight? Quincher Mitchin or something like that?
He goes by Mitchin Statement. He's been sending me some stuff. And we're going to play a few of the things that we can play on the FM. Because he's a great songwriter, but yeah, sometimes he goes off the rails a little bit.
Fair enough. Have fun with that. All being well, talk to you Monday afternoon at 3. See ya.